Hello, everybody. This is Craig D. Lindsay, a.k.a. Uncle Crizzle, a.k.a. Anastasia Beaverhausen, a.k.a. all this stuff. And welcome to Motherfuckers I Know, the podcast. I talk to motherfuckers I know because that's who I talk to all the time. And on today's episode, I'm talking with an old high school chum, classmate, whatever you want to call it. You know, we used to go to school together at Bel Air High School, where I probably remember her in a journalism class, and she's now down in Texas, you know, as a wife and mother and an author, which we'll talk about. So, Jennifer Cabay Barnett, welcome to the Crizzlecast.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, and just the reason I'm kind of like flowing into it so immediately is because I think we just spent 10 minutes talking to each other. And the recorder that I was working on, I think, stopped. And we were getting into a good groove going because we were recalling just each other during high school. I recalling how, like, as I established when we were talking, you're the first white girl I came across who was, I said to myself, you know what? You know, she probably thinks she's better than me. Because there are times when you would get lippy and all that stuff. And then you saying how that's how that's kind of been a thing with you. And like, and we were discussing that got you in trouble during your middle school and in high school. And I was trying to see how did it get like that for you in middle school?
It's hard to say. Like you said, it's always been an issue with me, not necessarily my attitude, but the lippiness. I mean, it's just part of my personality. I don't have what you would call an edit button. Mm-hmm. And at certain parts of my life, it's gotten me, in trouble. You know, teachers never appreciated my candor. Some did, mm-hmm. You know. And with, you know, depending on but elementary school, middle school, high school, you know, there's different psychological things going on with the kids at that time. So yeah. It's going to get you in trouble in different ways.
Yeah. Okay. Well, because I was just thinking, because, you know, just like, if you had that kind of attitude when you were little, it's just, you had to be something like, you know, like you said, the teacher didn't appreciate it because, you know, it's kind of like saw you coming and they think, oh, shit, here she comes. She's probably going to, you know, talk out the side of her mouth and say some things and stuff like that, because, was it kind of like a thing where just, like, you had just, I don't know exactly your upbringing and everything, but just, like, it was just an open environment in your family where y'all just, you know, say what you wanted and bust each other's balls and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. We were not a prim and proper family. Not at all. So there was no sort of code of, you know, conduct as far as, there was no prim and properness. Mm-hmm. And you know, looking back, honestly, I see this because I see it with my own kids. I just talk a lot. I've always talked a lot. I've always told stories. I've always had a vivid, crazy imagination, and it comes out of me in different ways, and it came out of me in different ways when I was little, came out in different ways as I grew, and, you know, people react differently to that. Some people would, you know, some teachers were like, oh, this is a gifted child. Some teachers were like, oh, this is a mouthy child. Some people were like, oh, this, you know, my classmates were like, she lies a lot.
Yeah.
When really I was just creating stories in my head, you know, and now as an adult I know what that's about, because I was meant to be a writer, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, just child development, Craig.
Yeah. Well, first off, I'm glad it wasn't just me, because, you know, just thinking, is she just busting my chops personally, or just is it a common thing? Because, you know, you were a cheerleader. Were you a cheerleader? Yeah. And so, just like, I just, you know, kind of, and of course you were blonde at the time, and so I'm just, goddamn one of them. Gotta deal with this shit, everything. And I didn't know exactly what was the case, but it turns out,
Well, I think it's probably case of me being mouthy and you being hypersensitive.
Yeah, I have that problem. I have it a lot, just like you. Because you mentioned being, you know, in the pre-interview, let's call it that, that you remember me, you know, being the guy who would read Rolling Stone magazine. And actually, it's funny, you bring that up because, like, I figured, and then that's how I found out about your love of Paul McCartney, and I figured, like, if I let her, you know, just, like, get pictures of Paul McCartney out of Rolling Stones I have, maybe she'll, you know, kind of diminish the whole ball-busting tactics and everything, just like...
Oh, my God, I am so sorry. I didn't realize. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I think I'm over it. But just like, you know, just as you say, it's just like some things I remember us, you know, doing, because I think we kind of bonded over the fact that you were a huge Paul McCartney fan. And, of course, I didn't know a lot of teenagers back then who were into Paul McCartney.
And
just trying to see, you know, where did that come from for you?
That came from my dad, actually. It's a cool story because I think I was like in second or third grade, maybe fourth, and I was staying with my dad in Austin one weekend, and we went to Sound Warehouse. Remember Sound Warehouse?
Oh, yes. I remember it well.
Right. So we went to Sound Warehouse. We were going to rent a movie. And I picked out The Exorcist. I wanted to watch The Exorcist. And my dad was like, I don't know. And he said, I make you a deal. I will let you watch this, referring to The Exorcist, if you watch this. Mm-hmm. And he picked up A Hard Day's Night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to a little kid, I was thinking to myself, well, that's black and white. It looks loser.
Yeah.
But I wanted to watch The Exorcist, so I agreed. And he put on that movie. And have you seen A Hard Day's Night?
Oh, yeah. I've seen Hard Day's Night, Help, that whole stuff. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, the beginning, opening scene where they have the riff and then they show them running down the street?
Yeah.
It was almost a spiritual experience. I don't even know how to describe it. I think other Beatles fans would get it. But, like, something just broke inside of me and let them in. I don't know how to describe it, but it was, like, instantaneous, powerful, intimate, like, as much as you can experience that as a little tiny kid love. And I was just absolutely mesmerized by this movie, by the music. And I knew the music just because that's the kind of stuff that our parents listened to. But the visual of them, their chemistry, I was absolutely hypnotized with love and affection for this band. And by the end of the movie, I was like hopelessly in love with Paul McCartney. I mean, it was a life-changing night.
And how old were you when this happened?
I mean, I must have been third grade, maybe, because I remember that prior to Paul McCartney, I had two loves. I had Michael Jackson and I had George Michael. Those were my two loves before Paul McCartney came along, and I think it must have been, early elementary school. I want to say third grade.
Mm-hmm.
But, by the time, I did watch Exorcist after that, but I think I watched Hard Day's Night probably 20 times before I went back home to my mom's. But the thing is, Craig, it's like never went away.
Yeah.
Like, you can say, oh, little girls pick up on boy bands all the time. Like, you know, there's One Direction now, and then, you know, New Kids on the Block. Like, that's common for little girls to latch onto that stuff.
Yeah.
But it never went away for me. I mean, I'm 37, and I still feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of sad, I think, but whatever.
I'm still trying to figure out what was it about Paul McCartney, because, you know, there's John, and there's George, and there's Ringo, and
yeah.
What is it about Paul especially?
It was personal. Physical. Mm-hmm. I think he's a doll, and I don't know if he set the standard for the type of man I think is attractive. Like, I think doe-eyed men are with dark hair, kind of moppy hair, just absolutely beautiful. And I don't know if that's because that's how I was and Paul personified that, or if that's how Paul was and he set the standard.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But, anyway, I don't know. I really couldn't say, but it's a valid love. I'm not psycho, but it's a valid affection that's never, ever gone away. Ever.
Yeah. It is funny that you, whenever, I remember, I think it was a year ago or so, when Paul McCartney was performing at the Grammys, and a lot of younger kids on Twitter were like, "Who the hell is Paul McCartney?" And there was some news stories that popped up about that. And knowing you and your relationship with Paul McCartney, you are the first person I thought of.
Uh-huh.
When now that was popping off, and I actually wanted to see about interviewing you about that whole thing that happened.
Well,
yeah.
I'll tell you a funny related quick story. A couple months ago when I was still employed, I had a picture of, like, 1965 Paul McCartney pinned up at my desk.
Yeah.
And this guy walked by my desk. And he stopped, and I think he was 20-something, this guy, and he pointed to the picture of Paul, and he goes, "Oh!" He goes, "Hey, is that the guy from Big Bang Theory?" And I looked at him, and I was like, "What?" Like, I was truly confused.
Yeah.
He goes, "Is that the guy from Big Bang Theory?" I said, "What are you talking about?" Like, I was truly confused by this conversation. I said, "That's Paul McCartney." He goes, "Who's that?" I said, "You need to go away right now."
Oh, yeah.
Keep walking. Like, I said, it's... Like, even if you don't know who the Beatles are, you've heard of them. Same as you've heard of Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You may not listen to them. You may not know their birthdays or whatever. But you know who they are. That's just pop culture. Even if it's from before.
I've told this story before. I've told this story before, I think, in this podcast, where I was hanging out with this woman I know, and I was telling her about how I just interviewed Al Green, or Al Green's coming to town, and she went, "Who is Al Green?" And keep in mind, I'm 36, and she was like 2 years younger than me, so like she's in her 30s, and she had no. I understand if you don't listen to Al Green, but how could you get this close to life and not know exactly who Al Green is? It was disappointing. It was a very disappointing thing for me.
It is, and it's like, you know, it's a testament to, I don't know, we struggle with this one in our house, because we're both, I'm a writer, my husband's an artist, and so we're big on culture. We think that's important. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not popular, even if it's not, I guess, popular, even if it's not current, they still need to know about it, because all those historical artists contributed to what we listen to today, mm-hmm. and what's popular today. And I don't know. I agree with you 100%. I think it's, you should at least know who they are, even if you don't listen to them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you.
I remember, I emailed you about that whole thing last year, and I was gonna interview you. I think we were gonna go through an email interview process, and you were you in England at the time?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I went to London, France last year.
London?
Was it February? Is that when the Grammys were?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was overseas.
Overseas, you're on vacation, exactly, or doing something?
Yeah, my husband's from London, so we try to go over once a year and visit the family, of course. And last year was particularly fun, because we left the younger two with his parents and went off to Paris for a few days,
mm-hmm.
which was amazing. I'm trying to move back, you know. He doesn't want to move back.
Why he does not want to move back?
Because the quality of life is better here. Like in England, if we sold our house here in San Marcos, and we have a nice historical home, haunted home, if we sold our house here, we could buy probably a tiny one or two bedroom flat in London with one toilet. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
he loves the weather here. You know, he's successful here. He's got a reputation here. And, you know, it took a decade to build that up. And I think that he's worried that if we move to England, that, you know, he'd have to start over. Which I understand, but I mean, I romanticize about England. You know, I hope I talked about England as much as I talked about Paul McCartney in high school, because it's one of my other loves.
Well, yes, because that was something I was going to, you know, get into about how the fact that, as with your love of Paul McCartney, also, you appear to be a major Anglophile, and Anglophile to the point where you married a dude from England, didn't know the dude was from England.
Right? And he doesn't want to move back. My plan failed.
Yeah.
No. If he secured, like, a contract overseas, like a mural artist contract, he'd move.
Yeah.
It's purely because he doesn't think what? Yeah, and plus we have kids, he's shipping it. And because, you know, we have kids now that are planted here in the American culture, but I don't know, I think they could move easily. But I'll work on him. I just gotta pray for a mural contract for him, because I can write from anywhere now, you know?
Yeah. Well, how did you two get together, and how long has that been going on?
We met in 98. I moved over to London to do an internship.
Okay.
A work abroad program. And he worked in a restaurant where I went into for a job. Mm. So we kind of met over the phone when I called to ask if they were hiring. And we were friends for a long time, because I was with somebody at the time, and so was he, and we genuinely were just good friends, but then our two relationships, you know, ended separately from each other, and then we just, you know, things just kind of evolved.
Yeah.
So it was a good thing, because I truly did marry my best friend. Like, we were genuinely friends before, because usually in a relationship, it's lust first, right, and then you kind of get to know each other after. But Christopher and I, we truly were, like, friends for years before we ever got romantically involved.
Okay, and when did y'all get married?
When did we get married?
Yeah.
March 15th, 2003.
Eyes of March. Eyes of March, okay. And, once again, just a complete love of Anglophile stuff. Well, I mean, was that intentional, getting married on the Eyes of March?
You know what it was? We wanted to get married at the gazebo here in town in San Marcos, and the guy who was marrying us was like, that place books up really fast. You want to make sure you get a day that nobody's going to be out there. I was like, nobody's going to get married on the Eyes of March. Mm-hmm. So we picked that day.
Yeah.
That's truly what it was. So.
And when did the kids start showing up?
Well, he had two. We have a blended family, so he had two from before, and then I had Harvey in 2004 and Sophia in 2005.
Harvey and Sophie, and this is a big house, would you say?
Yeah, yeah.
How's motherhood been to you? How do you think you've handled yourself as a mother?
Oh God, I don't know. That's a hard one. Because my kids are, you know, they kind of live and think outside of the box, mm-hmm. like Chris and I do, and that doesn't set so well in a public school setting anymore. Like, it's a real regimented world.
Yeah.
No. So, you know, when your kids act up at school, you ask yourself, am I doing something wrong? You know, mm-hmm. what can I be doing differently? So, you know, I think I'm a good mom. I think I have my weaknesses and strengths, same as the next person. But I think some women come by it more naturally than others. For me, it's been more of a struggle, just because I've always been real independent.
Yeah.
And after you have kids, you can't put yourself first anymore, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But it kind of makes me think, because it goes back to your childhood, because I believe, your parents, from what I've been heard when we've been talking, like, your parents were separated?
Uh-huh. Yeah, my parents divorced when I was one.
Mm-hmm. When you was one, really? What?
Uh-huh.
Like that early, and just like, I mean, what was the family like? I mean, just I mean, how many, I mean, do you have any brothers and sisters and everything?
So my parents divorced when I was a baby. My mom remarried to the man that essentially raised me. They have two kids whom I consider my brother and sister. And so I was raised in that environment until I was 16, and then they got divorced. And then my mom has been married to her third husband, Charlie, who has, Charlie had four kids. So all together, I count myself as one of seven.
That's seven.
Yeah, mom's been married. Yeah, now, after all the marriages are said and done.
So
that's an interesting thing because, coming from a background where, you know, there's a lot of divorce. Mm-hmm. When I married Chris, I was very sensitive to the fact that I was, you know, getting stepchildren or whatever, and I wanted to just be the best kind of, it was important to me to be a good stepmom. Uh-huh. And, you know, when you come into a blended family, there's just a lot of sensitivities with kids and exes and relationships. And not only that, but also, you know, we're dealing with cultural differences too. So, I don't know. Coming from that background, I just think I had a lot to bring to the table.
Yeah.
As a mom and a wife. Do you know what I mean?
Having
experience that stuff.
Well, just because got me thinking because you basically had two stepdads, and you know, and what was the relationship like with those guys?
Different. Very good with the second one. When the third one came around, I was older, so I didn't need a dad anymore.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I'm very fortunate because, and not only did I have, you know, lots of father figures, but my grandfathers were very instrumental in my life.
Yeah.
So I didn't really lack any, you know, men in my life.
Yeah.
So takes a village and all that.
Yeah. Like by the time the third dude showed up, you're just like, hey, what's up, man?
Just basically
that kind of relationship. Like, hey, what's going on, Smith?
That's a very accurate way to describe it.
Yeah. Well, it's just because, all right, and you married Christopher, and he brings in two children, and I'm assuming, because, like, you were talking how you have all these differences, but, you know, of course, the whole issue of just how was that in the early stages of you know, getting to know his children and just the whole issue of, like how was that relationship at first?
Actually pretty good. I mean, I love his kids, and I don't like saying his and stepkids, because I've always tried to bridge that gap, because my ex-stepdad raised me as his own. He never distinguished me as a stepchild, mm-hmm. And even now when I see him, he still introduces me as his daughter.
Yeah.
So I try not to... I've always tried from the very beginning to not try to be their mother, because I'm not their mother, but I am dad's wife, and you can trust me, and I do love you. And that was just something that I brought from my step-parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we don't get to see them very often. We only get to see them in the summers, of course, and then when we go over there. But in as much as the time allows, we have a really great relationship.
And, yeah, because the mom is still around and everything back in London. Yeah, she lives in England and, All right, so at least, it's crazy like, having this whole big extended family now A lot of people. Because, like, the stepdads, they're all still around and, you know, still part of your life in some way, and so.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm grateful because,
yeah.
I mean, all these parents, you know, have their extreme strengths and extreme weaknesses, and, you know, it just builds you into who you are, and all you can do is take those lessons and try to be the best parent that you can be, you know?
Yeah.
But it's, we're getting ready to, like, my friend James is getting ready to come over for the whole summer. And we're looking forward to having him. He's getting older, so he gets to spend more time over here. When they were younger, it was more limited. Do you know British school holidays are different? You know, they go to school year-round.
Yeah.
Have longer breaks, so we've always had to work around that. But he's getting ready to come over, and we're excited.
It's very interesting talking to you about all of this with your family and how you deal with your children and everything, because it leads into your career as a writer, because you published a book last year, which I have not read, which I hate, because, you know, I hate interviewing authors, and I have read their stuff, but it's just like, I've been doing other things, and, but hopefully...
Have you read the first chapter, Craig? Have you at least read the first chapter?
No. That's also another thing where just like, if I read anything and I'm like, what the hell is this bullshit? I'm just like afraid to walk on that precipice because I know you and we talk and everything. So just like, I want to get in that point where I'm just like, I want to make sure like I read everything I just haven't read it yet. I will someday when I get a Kindle or whatever. But your book is called Minder, which you write is under the name Jay Cabay. Wait, am I pronouncing that right? Cabay?
Say again, what?
Am I pronouncing Cabay? It's Cabay, right? It's just...
Right,
okay. Okay, good. It's been so long. All right. And just kind of, I haven't read any of it. And if I got to stop saying that. But I have kind of what it's about, and it's about, you know, relationship with parents and children and all that, and of course you name a character Sophia after your daughter and everything, and just so kind of, you know, I get this idea that from, you know, that your life is and what you've been doing as a person, as a wife and a mother, kind of is what drove you to write this book, and what is basically what it's been about and everything, and how did the book come about?
The book is fantasy. It's high fantasy, and it's kind of like Alice in Wonderland, but dark.
Yeah.
The book came about when I was on maternity leave, and I was kind of bored, and I basically just started writing a story about Harvey.
Yeah.
Initially, and I wrote it with the intention of it being for Harvey, like going down to Kinko's, running it off, and, you know, giving it to something to have when he was older, nothing serious. But what happened was that after I started writing, the book got pretty serious. It started getting bigger and bigger, and then I started, like, not randomly, meeting people that, like, helped me. Like agents, I would meet agents on airplanes and book editors here, like just random circumstance that kind of helped me eventually go, maybe I'm supposed to publish this thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what happened. And so, you know, what started off as just something for my kids turned into a proper novel, which, I mean, I had agents in New York, and I had a lady in London that was helping me. Anyway, I decided to self-publish for lots of reasons, but the book is, I mean, it's doing better than I thought, and something that's interesting is I thought I wrote it for kids, like, because it's a fairy tale for all intents and purposes. I mean, it's a dark fairy tale, but what's happened is that adults are reading it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm getting emails and letters from, like, grandparents who make a point to say that they are a grandparent and how much they appreciated the meaning of the story and what it's about, which is basically me explaining that childhood ends at 30.
Yeah.
For various and sundry reasons. But anyway, so that's how it came about. And I'm actually, now that the book is out on Kindle and doing pretty well, I'm actually going to query agents to, I'm going to try to get a print copy done through a mainstream publisher now that I know that there's an audience for it, because people are liking it. And I'm going to ask you to commit to reading chapter one. It's like 5 pages. You can do that.
I know, I just, like, yeah. Yeah, I didn't really, like, I didn't even know you could do that whole stuff with the opening chapter. I know, I've seen it right now where it says you can sample the beginning of the book for free and just, I think I've talked about this before on the podcast where just like I need to read more, but it's so hard to read because I usually forget everything I just read. And I don't know if that happens a lot for you, because you seem to be a person that's quite literate and literate, you know, having obviously you wrote a book, a whole book and everything, and just so it seems like you have a lot of literary influences with you.
Do I have literary influences?
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. Roald Dahl, who wrote all of the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, James and the Giant Peach, BFG, all those. Do you remember those?
Yeah.
He is by far my favorite author. I just always like kid stories. I love fantasy. I love portal stories. I love Alice in Wonderland. I love the idea that a kid finds a doorway to a magic place where some crazy shit happens. I love that. And I've always loved that. And so that's why I write about that stuff, you know? Because I'm passionate about it and because I have a lot of circumstances to pull from, lots of experiences to pull from my shenanigans overseas.
You have shenanigans overseas, ma'am?
I have shenanigans everywhere, Craig. I've had a shenanigan-y life.
Really?
Good life. Well, not anything, you know. Not, no. Yes and no. I mean, nothing juicy and, you know, horrific. But I try to check a lot of boxes. I believe in living life to the fullest. I don't, you know. The worst thing in the world to me is regret and shoulda, woulda, coulda. I try not to, you know, if there's something I can do to enhance my life without hurting anybody else, I certainly am going to try it. Uh-huh. I take risks, you know. So, yeah.
So you seem to be a lady who has a bucket list.
Sorta. I mean, sorta. I'm very spontaneous. If something pops up and I want to do it, I go do it. I don't wait for somebody to plan it for. I do it, you know?
Yeah.
And I find that where there's a will, there's a way. I believe in manifestation. I believe in prayer. And I think if you hound something, if you hound and pray enough about something, it'll fall before you in one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I was going to ask you, since you say little shenanigans, have you ever done stuff like been to a donkey show or anything like that? But but considering how you often talk about prayer and everything, and you pray for your husband, pray for things, and just, I'm just seeing like how much does religion and spirituality play a role in your life?
It's paramount, the most important thing. Mm-hmm. I'm extremely faithful, extremely spiritual. I mean, that's, you know, I do readings and stuff for people. That's something that I've done kind of semi-professionally for a couple of years now. Mm-hmm. Because I do feel spirit so clearly. And in a good way, not in a kooky, freaky, new age way, but in a real way. And it's helped me, and I'm able to help people with it as well.
Yeah.
We have an interesting dynamic in my house because my husband's actually an atheist. But he's, you know, he's not one of the disrespectful ones that goes around barking at people who believe in God. He's just, it's just, his experiences have brought him to where he is in his non-belief, and my experiences have led me to me where I am in my belief, you know?
Yeah.
But I just have extreme faith that everything works out as it's supposed to. You have to listen.
Uh-huh. I mean,
pay attention.
Well, I mean, what religious denomination we're talking about here?
I don't know. I don't check any box there.
Oh.
I just believe in God, and I pray, and I hear answers, and you know. I don't know. I don't check a box there. Okay. I don't know how to say it.
Well, I mean, that has to be an amazing dynamic in the family. Like, you're kind of like the theological version of James Carville and Mary Magdalene, where it's just, It's like she's the believer and he's the atheist. It's almost like a weird sitcom trope of some sort. I mean, it has been an interesting thing to have in the house, especially with kids and how you see, you know, how you guys go about raising them and whether or not, I mean, has that been a major issue of, like, you know, since he's an atheist and you're a believer, just like a discussion of whether or not the kids, you know, do you let the kids believe what they want to believe, or let me try and parse some of them.
Yeah,
hi, good
morning. No, we let the kids arrive at their own, you know, spiritual. I mean, I believe that God's a big tree, and there's lots of branches, mm-hmm. and you can climb that tree however you want. Christopher's very respectful of other people's belief systems.
Yeah.
If the kids came home and said, you know, I've decided I want to be a Hindu, he would thoroughly support that, or Buddhist, or whatever. As long as they believe that and that's what they want to pursue, that's fine. I mean, I've taken the kids to all sorts of churches. I mean, we've visited Hindu temples, we've gone to Christian churches, we've gone to all different types of Christian churches. We've gone to ashrams, we've taken walks in the forest and prayed. You know, they all kind of achieve the same kind of feeling. So however they want to get there, we support it, you know?
Well, it makes me ask, where did all this come from, this fascination with religions and just how it made I delve into your life?
Well, it kind of came with my burgeoning intuition. As you know, I don't know if you've ever read my blog, but I blog about my experiences as an intuitive and a psychic and the things that have happened, you know, with ghosts in my house and then with angels, which honestly I never believed in until I started having these very real experiences. And so then it begged the question of, okay, well, if angels are real, then they're coming from somewhere. So then I explore that, and this is a very personal kind of journey because you don't talk about this stuff. I mean, now I can because I'm comfortable with it, but it's a private journey, you know, initially. But I just arrived at some pretty clear understandings of, well, for me, how God works, you know, and how I'm able to communicate and pray and receive blessing and all that good stuff. But when I started doing that, just my life got so much better. Instantly, and so you hang on to that. Whenever there's something good, you hang on to that. And so I've been actively pursuing, you know, my relationship with God for, I guess, about 10 years now, ever since I realized that I had sensitivities to spirit, you know, to spirit. I'm sensitive to the fact that we're talking about this and this is a podcast and I don't know how this is going to come across, but I take the subject very seriously.
Yeah.
And it's not something that you can explain in 5 minutes.
Well, first off, I have read your blog, believe it or not. I've read that. And, I was wondering about that whole thing because you do talk, I've talked about that on occasion. And the thing, like, where you mentioned you had psychic abilities, I didn't know if that was accurate or if where did all that come from, like, how did you come about on this? And I was hoping, even though if we can't talk about in less than 5 minutes, you could elaborate on it further.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about it another time, but basically, I mean, I've always been sensitive. I've always, always, always been sensitive and subject to really bizarre and extreme coincidences, which I chalked up to coincidence until I moved into this house. And as you know, this house is famously haunted, right? We were on a television show for this house. Did you watch that?
Yes, I did. It was a show called My Ghost Story, and for Phil, I watched the show My Ghost Story. And for those, just go into detail about what happened and how this house and its history and where and how you came about to live in it.
Well, what I was going to say, though, real quick, is that, you know, there was so much activity in the house that I started exploring that. And through exploring, you know, and capturing evidence in the house and feeling and seeing and hearing things all the time, I was like, either I'm crazy or this is real. Those were the two options.
Right.
And through learning that it was real, my own capacity to understand the other side grew. You understand? And so that's where I learned that I had a gift, if you will. I don't think I'm gifted, but that's what everybody calls it. But everybody has intuition. They just don't really know how to use it.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, how I came about living here is kind of irrelevant. We just saw the house and loved it, you know. But anyway, it's life is very interesting. I'll just tell you that.
I have this feeling that you don't want to talk about much because it is something that seems sort of to elicit skeptical feelings, and I don't know if you've talked about this with other people, and they're just dismissive of the whole thing, and I do this podcast to give people a forum, whether they know it or not, and just, you know, if they wanted, you know, to talk about whatever they know or feel or experience, they're often welcome to it. It's not like I'm trying to cut down whatever they think or believe. Because, like, what you have is a very fascinating story. I mean, you are a believer, and you live in this home with a man you've known and loved for so long, and he is an atheist, and you live in this house, which is somewhat haunted, or I don't know if it's still haunted, or if it's
oh yeah,
or yeah, it's still haunted. And so yeah, so it's like I'm pretty sure whoever's listening to this will know more about all this.
No, and let me be clear. I don't mind talking about it, but I know that you have some. I don't know what time it is over there. Didn't you say you had another interview at like 1 o'clock or something?
Yeah, I got another interview. We got 12 more minutes or so, but so we can.
Okay. No, I don't shy away from these questions. I want to be clear. It's not something that I can convey. It's such an important subject matter. It is so important, and it's not something I can tap into in 10 minutes. I can gloss over it, but I used to be a lot more sensitive to the fact that people's skepticism, because I wanted people to understand that what I was feeling was so strong and so real. But I've learned that, number one, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks, truly, because I'm not here to convince. I can only relay what's happened in my life,
mm-hmm.
Right? I'm not a preacher. That's not my platform. But all I would ask from somebody is objectivity, you know, because truth is, nobody knows how it is on the other side. And by the other side, I mean the spirit world. You can call it what you want to, ghost, heaven, whatever. We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. But everybody that has their experiences are real, you know?
Yeah.
And everybody's experiences are different.
Yeah.
You know? Which is why people can't go around telling everybody else how to pray. Because it doesn't work like that. Because everybody's going to get it in a different way. So, that's why knowing that we have a time limit here, I don't want to, delve into it because it's going to get cut short, and it's an important topic. So.
Well, just in your own way, I'm sure you can, talk about many things that I've experienced like you've had, because as for me, you know, in dealing with religion and dealing with people and their relationships with religion, I mean, people don't find that people are, of course, have hard time embracing other religions. I mean, I was talking with a friend of mine once, and his stepdaughter was his friends with a young Muslim girl, and she wears the this girl wears the head wrap around her, you know, of course her head, you know, covering her head and everything like that, and they're just little kids, and you know he's told me just he just worried that how his stepdaughter might come into the house when they want to know more about Muslim religion, because you know he has trouble, and just basically, and I'm telling him you're basically acknowledging that you have prejudices about, you know, certain religions, and that's not a bad thing. Just acknowledging, because you don't know, you don't exactly know, and you worry, just peep out people, you know, and the religions.
Well, people are too dang sensitive.
Yeah.
People are too dang sensitive. They're too, you know, if you were super firm in your belief system, you wouldn't get so upset if somebody came along and said, "I don't believe." I mean, who cares if they believe you or not? All that matters is what you get out of it, and where you are with God. It's not your job to convince everybody else. That's not your business, you know? I think it's beautiful that we all kind of arrive at different ways. We're not all made the same. Why would we all think the same?
I think it also boils down to insecurity in some sense, because, like, if, you know,
totally.
It's like, you know, my religion is better than your religion. Like, I don't know how did that start, but yeah, that's basically what religion all boils down to. Just like we all play different, you know, faiths and whatever, and when somebody comes along and says, "Hey, we got all this, we got all that," and well, our religion has this. It's almost like, you know, look at religion the same way as organized sports, where it's just, like rooting for different teams. And this ongoing rivalry that never really goes anywhere.
Right, and I get it. I mean, there's power because people feel things deeply in their heart. You know, the masses can inspire that. Sports rallies inspire that. Religious, you know, revivals. I get it. I get why people are passionate about it, but they don't need to turn that into something that's negative. You know, it's pretty simple to me. I don't know why people get so funny, but whatever. I think you and I are on the same page there.
Yeah.
I know that my beliefs are not popular, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay.
But
if you want to talk about that at a later date, I'm happy to do that.
Okay. And in terms of your work as an I'm assuming you're continuing this as a full time gig. I know what you did in the past previously with. The writing, is that continuing to be an ongoing thing for you?
Say that again?
Is the writing, is that continuing to be an ongoing thing for you, just like your
full time? Oh, yeah. I've started book two. It's a lot more adult than book one. I'm hoping to secure a print deal for book one so that I can write book two. I need to do a little traveling overseas for some research because it takes place in Europe. But yeah, it's what I'm supposed to do. Absolutely. You know? Gotta do what God puts you here to do.
Yeah. Are you hoping that it might get to the point where you could make it a Twilight, Hunger Games type of franchise? It's like movies and all that stuff where kids watching everything.
A lovely wet dream, yes. I have tremendous faith that good things are ahead. I've written what I believe is a very good book. I truly am saying that. Like, it took me 7 years to write this book, and people's responses to it have been more than I thought. Like, it's more than I expected, so I know I've done something right. Not everybody digs it, but, you know, I just have to be patient. You better read my chapter one, damn it.
Yes, I know. Jeez,
It takes like 12 minutes of your life. Seriously.
I know. Just trying to. This is, you know, it's getting to a point where, you know, well, just. This. Yeah, that's. I'm trying to deal with books again because I got George Pelicano's book that I've been meaning to read. But, yeah, so it's kind of. kind of working with that again. But
I don't even need you to read the whole thing. I just need you to read chapter one, okay?
Yes. You need me personally to read chapter one. Isn't other great comments you've been getting on your Amazon page enough for me?
No, I want, you know, we've talked for an hour, mm-hmm. and I want you to understand what I write about.
Yeah.
And you'll get an immediate vibe from those few pages. It's short, and it's children's, I mean, I thought it was children's fiction, so it's not like a hard read or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, I just want you to understand the type of thing I write, that's all.
Yes.
It would mean a lot to me, Craig.
Okay. Yes, well, you have blossomed into a lovely, respectable young woman, and once again, it has left me going, oh, she probably thinks she's better than me, huh? Just,
you're in that job.
I'm sorry if I just made you feel kind of, uncomfortable at the beginning with reliving all the old high school stuff, you know, just...
No, it's funny. You don't realize the stuff that you do that affects people. I think it's interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm sure I was a dipshit back in those days, and just, you know, just, which I see you're not disagreeing with. So it's.
Well, no, I don't. My memory of you, seriously, I have one memory of you, and I always thought that you were kind of weird,
okay.
Very smart. And that we had music in common. So there was no negativity at all in my mind where you were concerned, like at all. So it's just funny to me that I affected you the other way. Because I always thought you were, like, you know, fine. It's not an issue. Like, I don't understand why I would have even given you an attitude. Because I liked you. You know what I mean?
Well that's, so. That's the thing. Like, you might have given the perception... That, you know, and that also leads into, I guess that explains the busting of the chops and everything as with, because I was wondering about that too, just like, I think she may enjoy my company, so I may not take it as, so I better not take it as seriously as I thought this was back then, and so just like, because I think that's what a lot of kids at that age, where people, what, does this person like me? I think that's kind of like it comes down to with a lot of people, just like, because wondering if, like, do they, because, yeah, I mean, it's all for a lot of kids, just like, just want to be liked and accepted, and I think for most of the part, like, a lot of kids who go through that age, like, are just wondering, trying to get people to not think they're idiots or uncool or unpopular and whatnot, so.
Yeah, and everybody goes through that in high school.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody. And those who say they didn't, they're lying. I mean, seriously.
I am.
So, I apologize if I ever made you feel weird about anything. I didn't mean to.
I know you didn't. It's okay. You're just you're a pure lovely angel.
Oh, and, thank you.
And just yeah, and so just of course and. Going into angelic theme and everything like that. But can people, yeah, this is where I usually ask my guests if there's any way, you know, people can find you online, where they can find you. You got a Twitter page. I know you got a Pinterest page. So where can people find you online?
Well, I have jakebay.com where you can read my first chapter.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Facebook. I have a blog. JakeABay at WordPress, and that's J and then KABAY.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty accessible online, and I love hearing from people. I love feedback from my writing, so if anybody wants to give me a shout-out, I will respond, and I appreciate everybody's time. And I appreciate you, Craig, for letting me run my mouth for a little while.
Oh, well, yeah, hey, it was fun. Wait, are you going to see... Paul McCartney's out on tour again. I just reading about that today. Are you gonna see one of his shows?
Of course. I'm gonna go to the May 28th show in Austin.
Oh, okay.
I'm going by myself because I could only afford one ticket. I tried to buy two of the cheap seats so I could take somebody with me, but they were all sold out. So I had to get the next tier up, which is like a significantly more expensive. So I have to go by myself.
Mm-hmm.
But But whatever, I'll make friends while I'm there.
I'm sure excited. You will. And then just...
I got told to shut up at the last concert I went, and I was screaming so loud. These people in front of me turned around and told me to shut up. I'm like, really? This isn't a Beatle concert. You're really telling me to be quiet? So, yeah. I don't know how many friends I'll make, but I'm excited.
Yes, 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 you are, and yes, you will be. So,
I'll take a pitch.
So this turned out well for you and everything.
Yeah.
Okay. Just I always ask people like that. Wait, you've never been in jail, right?
No comment.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying because I'll be looking for photos online, and I don't want to see like you on BustedMugshots.com.
No comment.
Okay, all right. Just warning you.
But, I'm a children's author, all right, damn it?
Okay.
Let's talk about nice stuff.
All right, cool. All right, I've been cursing all through this show, but okay. But, all right. But thank you very much, Jennifer. I appreciate reliving all the stuff and talking about your life and everything. It was lovely having you on the Trizzlecast.
Yes, it was fun. Thank you so much.
All right, let me just close this out here. As always, this is Craig D. Lindsay saying, hey, 1997 had its moments. So, just letting you know that it had its moments and all that fun stuff. Yeah.